dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk. My name is Bruce Knox. I'll be with you as one of your three hosts for this afternoon, this evening, or this morning, whenever you happen to be listening to this podcast. You're listening to show 249, our fourth spring show of 2019. Again, brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center. All kinds of fun under one roof. Triple Crown's located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn, and they're open 7 days a week, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Give them a call, 740-773-PLAY, that is 740-773-7529, or you can look up all kinds of good details on the web, TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com, our billboard sponsor for this show 249, and for all of the shows thus far. I'd like to bring in our other hosts here. First, Mr. John Bruce. John, how are we today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
I think we're doing okay. And the other soothsayer of SVC Sports 1, Mr. Shane Combs. Shane, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, guys. Happy Easter to you and your families. Enjoyed the church service this morning. Had a chance to have dinner, both sides of the family, and look forward to talking to SVC Sports. Had an interesting week with some different types of feedback. I think it'll be a great show.
It was all good feedback, wasn't it, Shane? Nothing negative?
Yeah.
Oh, well, good.
Hey, not really.
Well, I'm surprised. I was ready for you to enlighten us a little bit of something negative, but that is wonderful. All right. Well, guys, we're going to get right into it. Our first first segment here is what we call our three up, three down. We're going to give you each an opportunity to kind of encapsulate, if you will, things that are going on in the SVC. This segment brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club at 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Their telephone number is 740-986-4653. And you can get on their website at crownhillgolfclub.com and look up all kinds of information. But at this time of the year, if you've got any kind of banquets or anything coming up in the summer, you might be looking for a place to have it. Crown Hill has those facilities. So give them a call again, 740-986-4653. They're bringing us the three up, three down here. Guys, these can be sort of like headlines of what's been going on in the SVC, anything or everything that's directly or indirectly involving baseball and softball. So this week, I've already got my notes made, gentlemen. We're going to John Bruce for his first three up, three down.
All right. With 2 weeks left in SVC play, will the weather continue to cooperate or will it wreak havoc on the schedule? Mm. We've been really fortunate so far. I'll get more into how the weather played havoc with some Saturday games without it actually doing anything a little bit later on. But
I almost moved it to the front of the agenda just because I couldn't wait. But at least has a nice little teaser there.
Yeah,
that was good. That was good. I can't wait.
Yeah. So we've had been really fortunate with the weather. It looks like the weather's going to turn a little bit this week. But at the same time, you just never know because it's Ohio. If it does come, how is that going to impact this week's games, moving them to where we're going to have back-to-back days? Or let's say it happens Friday, final week of SBC play, we have four games in 5 days to decide the SVC champions in both leagues. Really could be something that could be kind of a really big thing to look for this week, and to see who has the pitching depth to actually get through if the weather doesn't cooperate.
Okay. That's John's first three up, three down. Shane, what do you have to say?
I'm going to go over to the softball side, and I'm going to ask going gone, and I'm going to put a question mark there at the end, guys, and I must ask that in a question form. The play on words there a little bit, John, is talking about Westfall using not only the pitching of Marcy Dudgeon, but obviously they've been using the long ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look down through two more games this week, two more wins. Dudgeon only gives up one run in the two outings. You have Matty Mullins with two home runs. Fulon, you and I were joking. I'm not even going to try to pronounce her first name because I'll butcher it. But Fulon, homers in both games. Mm-hmm. Josie Williams, Sammy Tackett, Sidney Tenney. I hope I'm saying that name right. And then, like I said, Fulon actually hit one in each of their games. But it's just incredible the way they're just routinely hitting multiple home runs every time out. Well, when you're pitching and defending at the level they are too, it's almost just an unbeatable formula. And then you throw on top of that the way Kylie Kello is starting to throw the ball for Huntington. Boy, does she kind of give Westfall a little bit of a boost too, knocking off Uniota. So the shutout performance, the one book I'd looked at had four hits, the other one five. Nonetheless, four or five hit shutout against that team is phenomenal. I really try to study the books a little bit more, John, because you and I don't get to see it in as many of those games. And understanding the athletes, watching them play other sports and coaching against them in other sports, to me, the thing that jumps out at me is Kello's 10 strikeouts. You know, when you're talking 21 outs, the speed of that Uniota lineup has to put so much pressure on you. When I think of kids like Pinkerton and the way she runs, we've seen Campbell, we've seen Wheeler, you know, Holt and so forth. Not to mention these kids set the table, and you have the big bat of Miller and so forth and Fisher and all the way down the lineup, to the point where the 10 strikeouts has to be such the big factor there in terms of you're taking half of the pressure off of your defense. We talk about that all the time in high school baseball and softball, Bruce, when you're allowing the pitcher and catcher to take care of half the outs. Well, obviously your defense is going to improve from that because you have less chances to make mistakes. So what a big performance though for Huntington there, with Lily Snyder getting the three RBI and Braden Collins with a couple hits and scored a couple times. Riley Black with a big two RBI performance. So Huntington starting to show signs down the stretch here. If they can stay opposite of Westfall, and then obviously Huntington and Uniota are still going to get their shot to try to get back into this thing and share it. But Westfall really seems to be in the driver's seat, and it just kind of, yeah, we're going to talk about ballparks a little bit more, but man, it seems like no matter where they go, they're just routinely hitting the ball out of the ballpark, and that's an impressive lineup, John. So I thought I would start on the softball side with a little going, gone, and Westfall seemed to be in control.
John, you're number two.
Well, that went a lot towards me on that. I was saying with the two-game lead, with six games left to play, is it too early to declare Westfall at least a co-champion on the softball side? You know, it's obviously it could be too early, but with a two-game lead and the way they hit, the way they field, the way they pitch, it's just that's just a really difficult combination for someone to have to hope that they lose twice. They still have Adina. They're not. Well, yes, Adina. No, they don't have Adina. That was last Wednesday. They still have Zane Trace, Huntington. Well, not as of the time this show comes out,
okay.
And Uniota left to play. So there's still some losses that are, you know, could happen.
Mm-hmm.
But then Uniota and Zane Trace have to kind of hope that, well, then they still have to get through perfect if that happens, if Westfall does drop two. So they have a really sizable lead. Coach Redmond just does an outstanding job up there. They always hit. And, you know, like we've talked about in the past, it's kind of difficult to play up at Westfall. And so they have a nice home field advantage. And if you're hitting home runs wherever you're at, you kind of take over that park too. So, you know, is it too early to declare them champions, or are we just kind of, well, we probably talk about that a little bit more next week. Mm-hmm. If they have a two game lead with three to play. Because that's one outstanding group out off Fearson Pike.
Okay, Shane, you're second of three up, three down.
Well, we'll turn over to baseball, and it's so jam-packed there still. We're just going to go with a tank still setting tracks to title. You have to put Uniota up there on top because that's where they're at. You know, at 7-1, they've kind of proven to be the most complete team in some of these one-run games and so forth. And we talked about the depth off the bench, the specialty athletes they have, and the depth of their roster, the speed, the ability to bunt, the ability to defend, the multiple types of pitchers and different things they can go to depth-wise. Obviously, Zane Trace, Westfall hanging in there. You mentioned the Westfall-Huntington situation, John, that a lot of people want to hear. Obviously, that game's going into, what, the ninth or tenth inning. That's going to be a big factor, and then, you know, turning around and playing again. So that's certainly an interesting situation there. I know those are always hard to coach in because, you know, you get off the bus and you're thinking, okay, we're going to go all out to get this 10th inning. Well, depending on how long it goes or who throws how many pitches or different things, it can also impact the regular scheduled game. Mm-hmm. So it's just it's so tough, but it makes for, you know, fun for the fan to follow. And, you know, I don't want to give too much away to my third title here, guys, but I guess just what we're looking at is how tough it's going to be down the stretch in terms of every game, the challenge you're going to face. You're going to face a quality arm, and it's funny John mentioned the weather there. You know, you almost wonder if there's certain teams that would almost want some weather to come, you know, where they feel like the depth of their pitching is better, you know, where other teams are praying that we stay right on schedule to keep the arms that you plan. You almost wonder sometimes if you have a lot of depth, if you're like, hey, I'll take my chances, my 3-4 versus your 3-4. How's that work out? So, you know, just a real interesting dynamic there. But going into these final six, you give Uniota its due. But I think we're in for some really quality matchups down the stretch here.
All right, John, you're going to wrap us up with the third of your three up, three down.
All right, with Piketon knocking off Zane Trace 3-1 on Friday, don't be surprised if the SBC's overall parity doesn't cause more chaos down the stretch. Like Shane said, you know, along with the weather, pitching depth, and just how good the league is as a whole, we could certainly see some interesting results coming down the stretch. Uniota has won several one-run games in the league. And then this week, I know what you guys said it to me last night when I was watching your game, Shane. And they were like, oh, who do you play this week? I said, oh, Painted Valley, Piketon, and Southeastern. I said, oh, that's an easy week. I'm like, no, it is not an easy week. there's no easy weeks in the SBC. And it's just, you know, that's how it is because every team has – 1-2 really, really good pitchers, and then some others have even more. So, I mean, just how outstanding the pitching depth is in the league. If you're not ready every night, the chances that you're going to get knocked off as one of the quote-unquote top teams is really good because, I mean, look what the Voldemort kid did against a really – really good offensive team with St. Trace holding them to one run. You never know what's going to happen. It's baseball. And it's when you have the amount of talent that there is in this league, it's you have to be ready to play every night or else, you know, a lot of things could happen. And I do wish that this was kind of like basketball where I could coach my game and then, oh, here comes the varsity game. Because I kind of hate missing a lot of these varsity games because of, you know, how good and talented the league is. Should be a really fun last couple weeks.
All right, Shane, take us home. Your third one.
I think I'm going to look at a pitching premium. Yeah, I mentioned on the softball side earlier with the way a couple Uniota people telling me that the Kella girl from Huntington was really sharp this time around. And we talked about Dudgeon. We talked about how Fisher and Pinkerton have both been good for Uniota. We probably don't talk nearly as much. It seems like we say every week, John, that Hitchens and Zane Trace, we don't talk nearly enough about the year they've had. But I think when you go to the baseball side, John alluded to, you have multiple arms throughout the entire rosters. You know, when you think of Garrison and Kunkel and Fogelsong and on down the line with so many different guys that they can throw, Free leads a staff there at Huntington with McCloskey and Roop and so forth. And Paint Valley, we've been thrilled to death with how Lane Mettler and Brock Blanton have thrown the ball all year. Matthews Volgamore with Pat closing there at Piketon. Josh, at Paint Valley, I have to give a shout out to the McWhorter kid at Southeastern. He's been terrific. He's really had our number twice. Stranded 13 of us the other night, I think, in that game. So pitched around a lot of situations. Uniota, we've mentioned the long line with the board Lambert, but again, they even have so many different options in specialty situations out of the bullpen and so forth, in the depth, and then Corzat and Blackburn and Eisen and how about, I mean, just every team. You know, you have guys, but it's even the depth. I know Zane Trace has had two or three situations where they've gone to like Farley or Congrove, mm-hmm. or some in the bullpen, and it kind of gives that offense a chance to come back late. So I think that's kind of what you're talking about. It's interesting, though, to me, guys, because we've stayed on track that we've been able to pitch. We still haven't had one of those things like John said, and if we do, we know from our past experience, John, how impactful that can be. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of the pitching probably has a lot to do with how much we've stayed on course and people have been able to stay within their roles and within the matchups their coaches intended them to.
Now, one thing with the pitch count really come into impact in a kind of tightened week. Like if we get four games in 5 days, how much
right.
pitch count? Yeah, because maybe you can kind of piggyback two guys to get through a game, but then you're not going to have one or
right,
two.
Right, where the 10 innings used to allow you the creativity of stretching some innings out, you're probably right there. You know, we've been able to fall into you're Monday, Friday this week, you're Wednesday, then next week you're Monday, Friday, and the other guys went, you know what I mean? But you're right, if you get into a situation where you're playing three, four times and you get into one of those tight situations where you're trying to close with your number two or trying to come back with – yeah, you're right, the pitch count could really stretch you into a fourth arm for sure, which is a little bit different than in years past.
Good job, guys. Three up, three down. Again, brought to us by Crown Oak Golf Club. Up next, we see what had John all worked up just a little bit on Twitter over the weekend. This segment, as we roll on with episode 249, brought to us by the North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming. That's 740-773-PETS, located at 2260 Anderson Station Road. They feel a good veterinarian out there must know each and every animal being treated and the temperament of each pet. The pets have likes and dislikes just like people do. Their practice is limited to small animals, so they get to know everything about their patients. Go see Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff again at North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming, 740-773-PETS. Appreciate their sponsorship. We're going to call this section Twitter Talk because there's quite a bit of stuff to talk about that happened or didn't happen, I guess, over the weekend. A little bit, Shane, do you want to add to this or do you want to just kind of go to John on this? Or I think we need to maybe kind of preface this a little bit first.
Well, the one thing I'll do is I say all the time, you know, I apologize when we don't get to things within the week or whatever. You know, last week we'd had some talk about what goes into canceling a game. Mm-hmm. You know, asking, you know, field maintenance, it was asking busing, like how early in the day should we call it? Or how late can you realistically wait to cancel a 5 o'clock game and so forth? And so I kind of had this on the bank of topics that, you know, I try to use to keep the show right around our hour to hour and 20 minutes each week. And just didn't quite get to it. Well, then over the weekend, John and I actually, in our busy schedule, actually had a chance to watch a couple hours of baseball together the other night. A lot of fun just sitting and talking a little bit during the season. We don't get a chance to do that, John. I enjoyed that. And But this took place, what, Saturday morning? And we were getting ready to play. You know, I went and watched a little League Baseball in the morning. We were getting ready to play our day-night doubleheader to VA. So I had not had a chance to talk to John, but this topic seemed to be what was on the mind of some people there on Twitter, John. So if you want to take it from there and maybe let us know what was bothering you a bit.
Well, first off, in my tweet, I spelled asinine wrong. Which,
yeah, I noticed it.
Yeah. So that was disappointing in my kind of venting. But and this started on Friday, actually. I follow a lot of different things on Twitter, a lot of schools, and there were different schools that started to say, due to impending weather, Saturday's doubleheader will be canceled. And I'm just like, impending weather? We don't know it's coming. It's Ohio. It changes all the time. I mentioned next week, a couple days ago, I looked and it was going to rain Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Then I looked earlier today, it was going to storm Tuesday and Thursday. I could probably look after we get off the show and it's going to say it's going to storm on Monday and that's it. It's just, who knows? You can't cancel before anything happens. Like the day before, whatever on the day of, I mean, okay, it rained some, for some reason you can't just push it back. I can recall days when me and Coach Thomas up at Westfall, we'd leave Chillicothe at 8 a.m. and get up there and, oh, we pushed the game back to 1 so we could work on the field for 2 extra hours. And, oh, look what happens. We played our games. I mean, it's just like, you schedule the games, play them. Do what you can to play the games. Don't cancel the day before. If you're going to cancel the day before, don't schedule the game. Because if you're going to cancel the day before, that means you probably didn't care enough about the game to play it. Now, I don't want to – like, it was all outside of our league. Now, I know Zane Trace had a game down at Waverly canceled. And from everything I've heard is Waverly's left field ends up being like a swamp if it rains at all. And it did rain a little bit on Saturday morning. So, I mean, you can't really do anything about the outfield. If the outfield is the way it is, that's kind of how it is. So I don't want to get on Waverly too much because they've been better than for years. They used to just cancel if it sprinkled. I'm sure their field was not playable or whatever, but, and I'm sure they'll make up the game, but there's these other schools that are, you know, we're canceling doubleheaders. And, I know White Oak. I don't know if the school they were supposed to play canceled like 2 days ahead of time, but I had heard that they were canceled a couple days ahead of it. I don't know if that was weather related or if that school was just like, we're good. we don't want to play this team, which goes back to my why schedule it. Yeah. But it's like in the winter. It's worse now, but it's like in the winter when we cancel because, oh, it's supposed to snow. Well, at least with snow and ice, it's dangerous to drive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no danger in going to a field and, oh, it's a little wet, we can't play. Like, it's just, oh, it just blows my mind, and it's lazy, and it's go work on the field. Like, if you got to push the game back, you were planning on playing baseball that day anyway, and it turned out that Saturday was a great day. I'm glad that the VA was there and you guys could play, Shane, so at least I could get out and watch games in the afternoon. And Southeastern and Eastern Brown played their doubleheader.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, kudos to them, too, because that was on real grass, so it's just I was not real pumped, and I was glad I got some backing on that on the Twitter machine. But I was disappointed I spelled asinine wrong, but that's what happens when you're a physical education teacher and you try to spell smart words.
you can't fix the tweets, though. That's my big beef. But I did notice, you know, I saw that your tweet go out, and I kind of figured what was going on right away because it looked gray that day. It was supposed to rain. I think they were calling for most of Southeastern Ohio to get like an inch of rain. And I think the whole system sort of did a 180 and retreated to the west I know I talked to my son in Cincinnati on Saturday, and you know, he had all kinds of rain over that way. We didn't have any over this way. So, yeah, it does make you kind of scratch your head. I guess that's what I would say. I don't know that I would use asinine even if I misspelled it, but I understand exactly what you're saying. Shane?
Well, it's really an interesting topic here because I think it really frustrates us in our line of work or you know, our take on this when we feel like we, the coaches, aren't going all into play. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of times, you know, in this topic, I've learned from being the AD over the years, John, that, you know, there are certain time periods that, you know, the administration would like for you to decide by because there's certain contract issues that, you know, once a bus driver shows up and you know, starts a trip or whatnot, they are owed for the trip and so forth. So there's some financial things and some, I get all that. But I think what you're talking about is, you know, a lot of schools are going on the spring break or a lot of people were starting a little longer weekend or, you know, it's obviously a holiday weekend here. And you know, what you get is a little bit of this Friday afternoon. Hey, it would be a lot easier on us all on Saturday morning if we just go and cancel on Friday afternoon type of thing. And I think sometimes that's frustrating because, you know, again, it's a varsity sport. Let's treat it as such. The baseball and softball teams are trying to play 27 games. And what happens is, I know sometimes we're sounding like we're being very petty or very picky, Bruce, but what happens is these are the types of things that John's referring to that lead to why we only get to play some years 21, 22 games. Well, what's that mean to a lot of people? Not much, but I would ask you, like, if your varsity basketball team played 16 games one year, would you not look at that and be like, what in the world are they doing? They don't even care about the sport enough to play. Or or if your football team just decided, hey, we're only going to play like 7 games this year.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a problem. So, you know, and as I've always said, in the spring, we have a tighter window. We've got to go. We got to get 27 games in. And I just feel awful for my program and my kids some years when I only get to 24 or 25. And then you look out there, like, we'll come up on the draw some years. And the hardest thing to do on the draw, you know, Bruce, you tell me, if you're going to vote a team that is, you know, 17-7 and another team is like 10 and, you know, 9, how do you even vote? You know what I mean? Like, you'll get teams that have literally played like a third of the season less. And, you know, some years you try to be more open-minded and ask, okay, what's going on down there? The part of you sarcastically wants to say rake your field once a week. But, like, you know, the other part of it is, you know, hey, what's going on? Like, what are we doing here? So it is. We've talked about some field maintenance in the past. I'm very fortunate right now to have some help. But there's many a times, like you said, John, what you do on a Saturday morning is you get up at 6 or 7 a.m., you run out to the field, you start putting the boots on or whatever, and you start working and working and working. And then, okay, by 8:45, you call that school and let them know, we can be ready, or, hey, can you move it back to 1? Where, let's face it, what's really easier is Friday night at 8 o'clock just to say, hey, we can't plug.
Yep.
You know, so that's where we're kind of coming from here. And what we try to offer here on SPC Sports Talk sometimes is what's so rare to spring sports. And I know sometimes when it's cold or it's rainy or whatever. So now, to throw this onto a track situation, here's what's so funny. I've talked about 3 or 4 different track people early in the year here. And they're almost to a point, John, where it's early in the year where if it's not like 77, you know, sunny with no wind, they don't want to run. Like, that, it's almost to the point where they don't want to, A, risk injury. You know, there's been a couple of our SVC track stars kind of tweak some things running in the cold here early in the year. There's been some, you know, when they're trying to recruit numbers and stuff, especially at the junior high and things like that, they don't want to make them hate it. You know, so it's just, that's an interesting dynamic too, where, you know, but again, they're not really linked to their regular season performance, I guess is what I'm saying. You know, their year is more of a preparation. Okay, here's the SVC meet. Now the year starts. We're going SVC meet. We're going postseason go. Where obviously our regular season is our body of work. Then it leads to our seed. It leads to where we finish in a league. And that's what's so dynamic is – and we talked about this with how just we totally are inappropriate to our JV kids in our league. We will make sure the 14 league games get played because that's the bylaw where there just needs to be. And I will say this in closing, I think you have to be careful who you schedule. You know, a lot of people have the right to schedule whoever they want in their non-league. A lot of times, John, I think you get to know your types of relationships and the types of programs that you're, you know, I know at Paint Valley, we play a lot of teams where I have good relationships with the coaches, and we're going to do everything possible to get those games made up and played. And I think that's important as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I completely agree. And well, I was just going to jump in with one more thing. When you talked about the tournament draw, I know SEO Preps ends up having some, usually when the tournament comes, it's been better lately because there's one school in a different league that is maybe in an Ohio Valley, somewhere like that, who used to come in like 10-1 every year. And then you have Wheelersburg that would come in like 16-3, and that other school would be like, oh, well, we got less losses. Mm-hmm. We also played a lot less games, and so they'd get upset over getting the 3 or 4 seed, and then, oh, shocker, they'd get knocked out early because they had only played like 14 total games. And you have all these other teams that they do what they can to get their games in. I know in our sectional for years, we had the – there's one team that a Western Unionist place that would come through with a 5-5 record every year. It's like, what are you doing? Just play your games. And it's just – it blows my mind that some of these teams only play league games too. But it also could be an advantage because I know you mentioned it the other day of one team came in last year, what, 8-8 at the tournament draw and – well, they're playing in the SEC. Yeah. And
it's right.
Like, yeah. So sometimes it is an advantage to play less games, but it's just.
Yeah. Well, it marks our 2/3 point of the year in the league. And I know we have our prom coming up. So sometimes prom can mm-hmm. impact this, yeah. Bruce, because you take your prom weekend off.
Yeah.
So once we get through the prom season, this will all equal out a little bit. But like I'm looking at the SVC there, 14, 13, 12, 15, 18, 14, 13, 16. I mean, that's where our league's at right now in terms of our total games. So all of our schools are going to approach the 24, 25, 26, 27 total games. And I just don't know why you wouldn't want that for your kids and for your brand of baseball.
Well, John, I hope you feel better about this now that we've discussed it.
I do. I vented a lot last night at Shane's game, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't do that while we were taping, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got more out. It's probably okay. Better.
To me. All right. Well, we'll send you a bill for counseling services later. Guys, okay, up next, as the league makes the turn, we answer some questions about teams and individuals in the SVC. On episode 249 of SEC Sports Talk, this segment brought to you by Crown Hill Golf Club, 9500 U.S. Route 22 West, Williamsport. Telephone number is 740-986-4653. Give Kevin and the boys a call up there. Tell them what you're looking for, and chances are they'll be able to fit your pistol, so to speak. CrownHillGolfClub.com on the internet. All kinds of great facilities, great golf course, and we appreciate their support. Guys, we're going to get into some questions about our teams and individuals. And you know, as I alluded to earlier, the league makes the turn. First, we're going to talk a little bit about elite pitching. And why do you think pitching has been so good this far in the season?
John, I'm going to let you start with that because okay. I had a unique take on that. I just wanted to see if I was way off.
Okay. Now, I think one thing that helps on the elite pitching is how many young guys there are that are kind of newish to varsity pitching, at least. who have really good stuff. You know, if you have really good stuff, if you throw low to mid 80s, you can really impact a game, especially the first time someone sees you. Now I'll go back to our 1-0 game against Adina last week. I kind of tweeted about how it's really good pitching, really good defense. And that was two sophomores. It was Cameron DeBoard for Uniota, who's 6-0 now, and Jarrett Garrison for Adina. There was very few hard hit balls in that game. Ends up being a 1-0 game. Each pitcher picked off a base runner. We threw out another runner trying to steal. Then the defenses were really good. So if your defenses are really good, that ends up, and you're not getting hard contact, that makes it a lot easier to get outs, which, you know, was happening in that game. Then the depth of the pitching across the league has been really good. It's just really improved, makes things really difficult for hitters because, you know, if you see one style of pitcher all game and then another pitcher comes in that's slightly different, I mean, that's a major impact. So, like, going back to that game, we bring in, I mean, we have Cameron DeBoard throwing really well, kind of struggled control-wise down the stretch. And so Coach Taylor goes to Jeremy Lambert to finish the game, and he comes in, four pitches, gets us out of the game, gets a strikeout, and it's just you go from seeing a lefty throwing a certain way to a righty with completely different stuff. It really impacts a game. Shane, you mentioned a lot of really good pitchers, the Lamberts, Loughmore, Mettler, Blanton, you know, Hal Balfrey, Matthews, McCloy, Ison, Blackburn, Corzett, McCorder. I mean, that's probably not mentioning everybody. Pack, the Felger kid from West Falls also sure, really solid. Sure. Yeah, it's just the depth of the pitching across the league is just really good. And if you're not walking people, that makes your defense better also. So making the other team put the ball in play keeps the defense interested, paying attention, makes it to where you're more prepared each play. I just think that the depth of the pitching this year in the league is just outstanding, and I think it really has impacted the league so far.
That's an outstanding answer, and the reason I wanted him to go first, Bruce, is this had come in from a fan asking about the elite pitching for both baseball and softball, and I guess with softball, it's the obvious thing if you get to throw the one kid at a time. So when you have good pitching, you have good pitching. But in the baseball side, John, I had two theories. One was very simple in terms of, we mentioned earlier, the lack of rain. So you're able to keep your best arms throwing, not just throwing, but throwing on proper days rest. We haven't had to hurry any kid back. In fact, as we got to the halfway point, we had already planned on paper. And then again, the weather and kind of playing at the VA allowed us to do this. We allowed here in the middle of the year, let's go on a whole week's rest now. So, you know, you had that opportunity to do that. But the other thing I wanted to ask you more importantly about was with you and your JV experience, how much do you feel like the pitch count is starting to impact pitching in a positive way in terms of it's making junior high coaches and JV coaches more aware of the arms, but more importantly, more aware of developing more pitchers. You know what I mean? Like, it's a situation where we're working harder now to play more junior high games. We're working hard now to get aggressive in scheduling JV games. So, like, for example, give me an idea. Like, I know on our JV team at Paint Valley, we've probably had 3 to 4 arms throw what I would say impactful innings in terms of getting better. Like, is that a fair number for like even Uniota in terms of the numbers you've of games you've played this year?
I've had three main pitchers, the starting pitchers, but I've had several kids that have came in and pitched in key innings. And I still have a couple that, you know, we're a little slow to start the year, trying to work them in. And this week, it looks like going to be able to work in, you know, get a couple more extra innings out of those guys. But it's I've been trying to get 5 or 6 guys that could possibly throw next year if needed.
Right.
You know, and And you don't know how quickly some of them are going to develop, because the three main pitchers I have are freshmen. So here in a couple of years when we
– Oh, and the varsity's not old.
Yeah. So, I mean, so they're probably going to have another year to work on different things. And the kind of cool thing with JV, too, is we can work on different things during the game that they've been struggling with. So it might be, hey, we're going to really focus on your changeup today, or we're going to focus on – how quickly you get to the plate. We're going to throw over a lot more today just to work on it. And that's the kind of cool thing with the JV is, you know, it's kind of like you can almost treat it like an extended spring training like they do in baseball.
Right.
Yeah. And I know other teams around the league only in my non-league game on Thursday have I seen a team overdo a pitcher. And that was just based on just numbers on that team. It was just, they just didn't have anyone. And, you know, so I think we've been blessed across the league to be able to, you know, kind of throw different kids out in different situations with both levels. Like Thursday, I was able to throw four different kids to get them some kind of impactful innings when we're ahead instead of, you know, maybe if we're behind. So it's definitely important to get kids to pitch in different situations also.
Well, that's fascinating to me, Bruce, because I just think what's happening, like when the junior high first started, we said, okay, we're going to play these doubleheaders on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So what was happening a lot of times, you take your two best arms, you attack the doubleheader, and you see if you can win. Okay, well, that's fine. But, you know, now we're starting to schedule, we're trying to have separate seventh and eighth grade teams, okay? Or even if you don't, we're trying to throw some junior high games in throughout the week. And the idea is, even at the small school, trying to get two to three arms and at least one, if not two, catchers per grade, so that you're starting to form these batteries that make for just better baseball.
Sure.
And I just think that's starting to grow. And I think what John's saying is such a great approach at the JV level. I know we've used a kid, you know, John, you talked about John Alley in the past. We've used him Wednesday night, capping him at 75 pitches. Well, then we're trying to use him on Saturday. We threw him against a Peebles team, and then last night he kind of stepped up in terms of opponent, in terms of talent, against Alexander.
And he looked really good.
Threw the ball well. So, but my point is, that doesn't work without, like, Kai Pulliam's my JV coach. I want to give a shout out to him. That doesn't work unless you have guys like John Bruce that understand. He's sitting there telling you, hey, we can work on this at the JV level because, hey, I'm trying to win, but I'm trying to develop young men to be better players. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's where it's at. Like, you know, Kai's the type of guy, if I say, hey, John can't throw over 70 pitches, well, he'll go get him at 69 if he has to get him in the middle of the bat, you know what I mean? Like, or whatever it is. So that can't happen unless you have younger coaches that understand development and so forth. So that's really good stuff. So, I mean, obviously we have talent, but I think throughout our league, when it comes to elite pitching, I think junior high baseball, JV baseball, and then knowledge of the pitch count and what it's doing to create depth are some of the things, John, I wanted to talk about. And just listening to some of your feedback, I think we're kind of on the same page there.
Guys, we had another question here. I'm looking for some opinions on who are some of the tough outs in the SVC.
Well, I should be more prepared here, John, so I may need some help. Shame on me for almost not being prepared. But I had down leadoff hitters. Mm-hmm. In terms of at the high school level, when you play the 7-inning game, you know, you're getting that third at bat. You hope they get in the fourth at bat. If they don't get a fourth at bat, you haven't had a very good night. You know, but to me, and if I go through and if I mess up here, I know lineups change, John, help me out, but we're going to go with Fout, Beeler, McDonald, Swain, Gillum, DeBoard, Williams, and Fetters. How'd I do there?
Pretty good. Fout hit two hole against us, which was Lucas Campbell's song the first time.
Okay.
Hit leadoff, which, you know, still really good, really good bat there.
Well, my point is, even like Pinkerton or Braden Collins on the softball side of things, or someone with great speed, like, you know, if a Pinkerton gets on base to lead off an inning, or Braden Collins, say, to just in any situation, I don't know how you almost, unless again you get the strikeouts, I don't know how you keep them from scoring. You know, their ability to steal bases, their ability to go first to third, their ability just to do a lot of things with their speed. And that's so impactful in these games that are one-run games that we're playing so many of in our league. If you have that leadoff kid that can just generate offense almost all by themselves, it, you know, and obviously they have good hitters behind them because they're hitting at the top of the order. But it's, to me, that just becomes a big, big factor in terms of the momentum. I know, John, dealing with high school kids, sometimes just the importance of scoring first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the momentum, the little shot of energy it gives your dugout just to be up 1-0 instead of down 1-0. And sometimes what can happen in terms of if you're able to retire that leadoff person, you feel like, oh, wow, they're a really good player. I don't have to mess with them for hopefully another inning or two here. You know what I mean? It just, so to me, the leadoff hitters are some of the people that could really fall into that no matter what inning you're talking about. But they're at the top of the lineup, some of the really good players in our league.
Yeah, I liked the idea. One thing we tried 1 year with Westfall was we were struggling to score runs, but our 1, 2, or 1, 3, and 4 hitters were really hitting well. So we just moved the 2 back to like 5th and then moved everybody up. Oh. So maybe our best hitter was hitting 2nd, or, you know, because you want those guys to get as many at bats as possible also, or you want those girls to get as many at bats as possible, because usually they are going to be your best hitters or most impactful players. That was last night was the first time I got to watch Mackie McDonald play. And man, that's he would be right at the top of if you're writing down tough outs, because that's a kid who can hurt you in a ton of different ways. Some other kids, I like to look at the 3-hole a lot across the league. So like Elijah McCloskey, Ethan Kunkel, Chad Eisen, Sam Frazier from Westfall. It just never has a bad at bat. That kid's hit for the last 10 years of rookie baseball. Cannon Pack, another kid who's hit for about 10 years of varsity
baseball.
Player.
Carson
DeBoard. It goes across the league. Usually your really impactful players are going to be your 1 and 3 holes. Kids that aren't going to give up outs. If they are, it's usually going to be it's going to be a quality out, maybe hit behind the runner. Move them up to 3rd, 2 strikes with the runner on 2nd. I know Nate Kaiser for Uniota does a really good job of that. If you just look across the league, you have these guys with really good speed that if they put the ball in play, they're at least putting pressure on the defense. Like you mentioned, the Williams kid from Westfall is one of those that can just flat out fly. I think there's a lot of tough outs across the league. As long as you're not just going up first pitch, swinging no matter what, because then you can kind of fool them and get ahead of them. Mm-hmm. Or maybe keep them off balance and get them to roll over on a ball. But I do think a lot of our 1 and 3 holes across the league are just really tough outs.
Yeah. All right. Our third question here, guys. We had a fan that asked this week, how much does a team's home field play a role in the style they play? And then I wanted to add, does it give you an advantage? I assume the home field always gives you an advantage. What do you think?
Well, I've always said that the home field advantage in baseball is the advantage of hitting last, which is probably the most strategical. I mean, okay. Like in basketball, there's no strategical advantage of playing at home. It's just nice to play in your home gym. Mm-hmm. It's not like you get the last shot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or in football, you don't get the last possession, but let's face it, we'd probably rather play at home than on the road. Where baseball, there is the strategical situation of in these one-run games. I know it's a lot easier sometimes in a tied game trying to score a run to win, whereas what do we say on the road, John? You got to get 6 outs to win, basically, once you get the extra innings. You know, you got to get a hold, Bruce, then you got to score, and then you got to get another hold.
Yeah.
Where I think – if I understood the question, I think what's really intriguing here is sometimes how certain diamonds or certain ballparks lend itself to a certain style of play. Like the first one that jumped out in my mind, John, was Zane Trace Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those kids just roll out of bed and hit. I mean, those kids can flat hit now. I mean, they're going to sit on the fastball and they are going to wear you out. I know they've gone through a little tough stretch here, but I mean, that's just baseball where they'll hit it at some people and so forth. Even in a game that we ended up losing 3-2, I felt like, gosh, they just hit the ball hard all night. But you know, usually what happens there, Bruce, is the wind blows straight out. Mm-hmm. Well, that lends itself. They're a team that's built more on hitting doubles and home runs. Well, they're a team that does that. So if they played every single home game more in a Paint Valley ballpark, they would still be incredible hitters. They've come to Paint Valley several times and have worn our pitching staff out. But my point is, you know, it's easier to play that style when the wind's blowing out 15 miles per hour instead of in at 25.
Right.
You know, Westfall softball, we talked about these ballparks a couple weeks ago. If I'm thinking of our baseball win, John, and I kind of take that across the athletic grounds, that wind would be kind of just almost dead center or right center, wouldn't it, in terms of Westfall? So I do think that's a factor. And now I know other ballparks have gone to the grass baseline or the thick grass or the short grass, or it's you consider it a slow in. The Piketon has kind of a slow infield in terms of the ball. It'll eat it up, and you know, speed becomes a big factor. Arm strength in the hole becomes a big factor sometimes in those situations. Those are some of the things that come to my mind. I guess high school pitchers might be more comfortable in their particular in their circle or on their mound or whatever the case might be. But you know, John, those are some of the things that came to my mind. What do you think here before we dig deeper into this question?
Well, I think you know, the ballpark could play a role. It could also play a role in lineup construction. If you've got you know, like you said with Zane Trace, you got a bunch of guys that can mash the ball. Do you load them all up at the front, or do you maybe you put a bunter in between? Because I know the year Coach Allen took him to the state tournament, their two-hole hitter was one of the better bunters I'd ever seen. And oh, he just happened to be behind two, in between two guys who got drafted. But you get your first guy on, bunt him to second. Okay, he's in scoring position. I mean, and then you got these guys who can hit doubles, hit a double. And you got another guy in scoring position you just scored. So that could play a role. You know, just do you load up speed ahead of your big bats? We did that one season ahead of the Lewis and Sternrock kid. We loaded up a couple fast kids at the start that we thought could get on. And, okay, those guys can get back-to-back doubles, and we're scoring two or three runs in an inning. And just, you know – lineup construction is important. I do think with how the wind plays, you know, there are some places that, like a couple times this week, we've looked out at our field and just gone, the wind never blows this way. It's usually a crosswind, and a couple of days it was blowing out. And like, oh, this could be interesting. just see how it plays different. So I do think that, and also defensively, your lineup. If, like at Westfall, you have to have a really good right fielder all the time because the wind's going to be blowing that way, kind of right center. It's really fascinating how you construct a team, because I knew it as a player that the right fielder is important. And you always hear it like kind of joked about with these kind of hokey joke baseball guys on like YouTube and stuff, like making fun of the right fielder. It's like, no, it's
yeah, that's incredible. That's crazy.
And I mean, you know, a lot of kids think it's funny, whatever, but you know, you have to have a good right fielder, especially with some of the league's places in the league. I know we always had a really good right fielder up at Westfall, and I was like, well, I didn't understand why he was in those certain spots. And I have my best on my JV team, my best outfielder is my left fielder because the ball tends to get pulled more in the JV game. And it's just and I know a fly ball out there, he's catching. And it's just, you know, sometimes it's just how you construct your team, does have a lot to do with how the field is and how, you know, how each field plays.
No, that is. That's really interesting. And it's really interesting to see a depth in a roster. We were talking about tough outs earlier. I remember Chad Carroll and I talking baseball a lot. I remember one of the really good players I've coached against in my 20 years is the Irvin kid that played for him at Huntington. Yeah. Boy, could that guy hit.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Chad just got to the point where he got so frustrated with people pitching around him. He just woke up one day and decided he was going to hit him lead off. Well, yeah, Vader, are you going to walk him to start the game?
Right.
You know, and then if not, like he hit like three bombs, the lead game's off, 1-0. You know what I mean? Like, So it was, yeah, he just put him there. And, once watched him get intentionally walked with the bases loaded in the district tournament.
Yep.
That's how good he was. So
it was in the seventh inning.
And what was so funny about it, I'm sitting there as a coach myself, and I'm thinking, that was a little bit bizarre, but I think I agree with him. You know, it was that fun. So, but my point is the depth sometimes, you know, if you don't have other guys to set the table, you know what I mean? Sometimes you just get creative, and that's kind of what John's saying. If you don't have three really good outfielders, you may have to get creative and think, okay, well, you know, like at Zane Trace and Uniota, right field's the sun field. You know what I mean? You're going to get a tough look there. Maybe you're going to get a ball there. Maybe you're going to play the wind. Hey, do I have a guy throwing like 85 tonight, or do I have a guy throwing 68? You know, does that have impact where the ball's going to be hit more? So, you know, the easy thing is to just have like, you know, nine really good players.
Yeah.
Throw out there. But, you know, obviously you're trying to get guys into situations where they can impact the game the most. We always joke in the game of baseball that the ball seems to find you. And I'm sure softball's the same way. But, you know, I hear softball talk about the same thing in terms about how you've got to be really, really athletic on your corners, or teams can really small ball you to death, you know, so you got to be able to really, you know, defend the slap, defend the bunt and so forth. So, man, that's really some good stuff there on the ballpark, because I do think it impacts the game quite a bit.
Hey, you mentioned the velocity for the pitchers, which goes back to one of my favorite stories from my dad. He was coaching down in Babe Ruth, and he had had his best player playing shortstop. Well, they had one player, I think it was Garen Veras. When Garen Veras would pitch, he's throwing harder than anyone in the league. So he switched my brother and his best player positions. And he had all these parents were like, why are you putting your son at shortstop? And just making this big deal about it. And he goes, just watch. And he said there was like eight balls hit to the second baseman that game. And like my brother, Greg, who went to short, didn't have a single ball hit to him. It's just like, there's reasons why we do these things.
You guys are talking about right field. Do you remember WKRP in Cincinnati? They had their softball against WPIG. I don't remember. But Les Nessman played in right field. And I've always kind of taken that as a slap, because that's where I played when I started. So, you know, Les Nessman and I are equal ball players, I guess. Well, good stuff. As always, we head to our coach's corner to end the show. Shane and John will continue to look back at what they've learned. As we wrap up episode 249, this segment brought to us by North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe. Their business hours Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday 9 to 12, and the Doggy Daycare Resort hours 7 to 7 on Monday through Friday, 9 to 6 on Saturday and Sunday. North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming, 773-PETS. Appreciate their sponsorship. Guys, we've been doing this, I think, at least three of the four episodes we've had here in the spring, and we kind of changed the question a little bit from our winter ball section. We say, when I was a younger spring coach, I wish someone would have told me blank. This time, John, let's let Shane go first. So, Shane, when you were a younger spring coach, you wish someone would have told you what?
Well, maybe this is really fitting here on the holiday where I've had a chance to spend a lot of time today. But, you know, John, I think every coach will relate to this. But, man, when you're younger, you don't get it. And I think that's that I wish someone would have told me the importance of having a family who is all in with you doing what you love to do. And I think, gosh, when I think of coaching, I wake up, you know, about 6 a.m, take off by about 6:45. I go teach the day. Bell rings at 3. Baseball. If it's a practice night, I usually have some scouting I'm going to run out and do to the best of my ability. An early night, I get in around, 8:30. If it's a game night of my own, I'm looking more 9:30, almost 10 o'clock before you settle in. And then you get up and do it again the next day. Well, that takes a special type of, spouse at home. Mm-hmm. It takes, a special type of family support and so forth, when you go to do that. So that might not sound like that big a deal for a couple months, but now times that by doing it for 20 years.
Yep.
And man, that's incredible. And I just think that's what makes it so special to be a coach. I think that's why coaches respect one another so much. From a little complaint here, a phone call here, or whatever it might be, the dynamic of coaching and the different things that are very, very supportive. I know, like with my wife, Bethany, she's not the biggest baseball fan, but she sure roots for Paint Valley baseball hard because she knows it's important to me. You know what I mean? Now, we can go and watch volleyball together all year or basketball or things like that. And it's something we enjoy doing, but, she's just very, very supportive because she knows how much the program and coaching means to me. So I think that's something that I would tell young coaches is recognize in your family the importance of the balance and finding that balance and so forth. But, gosh, that's something that I've tried to go back through and look at all the things, and it's really shame on me for not mentioning this long before. But I think if I were giving advice to a young coach, male or female, is to look at the family structure in terms of, how it fits and how supportive, a lot of times what happens, John, is we're lucky enough, like my wife met me and I was already a coach. So she knew that she was already marrying a sports junkie. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was one of those things. So, sometimes relationships form and it's different or so forth. So, like we always say, Bruce, you can even get some dating advice on SVC Sports
sure,
Talk. You know
sure.
what I mean? It's not just sports. So. But no, in all seriousness, I wish someone would have really helped me appreciate more the family structure that allows me to do what I do.
Okay. That's interesting. A little, like you said, dating advice and so forth. Relationships.
It's completely right, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
John, how would you complete this sentence? When I was a younger spring coach, I wish someone would have told me blank.
To make sure you have a good working relationship with the softball coach and always, always choose McDonald's over Wendy's after games.
Okay, I got to hear this last part, but go talk to us a little bit about the reciprocating relationship with the softball coach.
Well, it just kind of goes to, this is somebody you're going to ride buses with. This is somebody that you're probably going to be doing a lot of travel time with. Mm-hmm. So, it'd be good to get along with them. It'd be good with the softball program to know who's going to sit in the front of the bus, who's going to sit in the back of the bus, where are we putting the equipment. Like the other day, we're going to Logan, and softball coach, as soon as I get on, says, hey, are we good to stop to eat on the way back? Because it's a long bus ride. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. And the fact we talked about it before, instead of it just being like, oh, hey, we're going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And if I said I had some other stuff going on, I don't think he would have cared. It's sometimes you get to, like, if you're going to stop with the team and eat, you're probably not eating with your players because your players are going to have, it's good camaraderie thing. So, you're going to talk with the other coaches.
Yeah.
And I know my first couple years, well, I just go back to my very first trip with the softball team. I went to pull out of the West Hall parking lot and I looked to my right and there was a girl sitting on the sitting up by the doors. And I was like, okay. I looked around. There's their softball coach. They just took off. So I'm going to school at Wright State and living over there, and I'm sitting there for an extra hour. Like, hey, my phone doesn't work here. Sorry. you hang out there. I'm sorry it's cold. We're not, it's whatever. So that was not a good start with that coach. So me and her, did not get along.
Okay.
I'll go to the other part.
Yes. I got to hear this. This is important. It involves food, Shane. Listen up.
Yeah, yes. So Shane, I believe you know this, McDonald's, if you bring players in, they're going to take care of the coaches. You go in, you just had a long day, hopefully you get a win, and you're taking your team out to eat, and they're like, okay, well, coaches eat free. Thank you for bringing us 20 miles and, $150 worth of food. We're going to bite the bullet on this $20. So we went to Wendy's the other night, and we go out there. We've got a softball team with two coaches, and baseball with me and Coach Blue and their bus driver. And I say, there's coaches, what do we do on that? And they're like, oh, we have one bus driver and one coach eats free. I'm like, we're about 20 kids. At least let a coach from each team eat free. I'm like, I don't care. So I didn't really argue it too much, but I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore, because McDonald's takes care of us. Wendy's did. I enjoy free food. Especially on a long night. Our JV softball team won a game 23-12, and their game actually lasted longer than ours. So we didn't get back to the school until like 10:30. I just wanted a free hamburger. But instead, I thankfully brought my wallet and, took care of that. And, it's just, I feel like it's important to know that, McDonald's is going to take care of you. Wendy's, the only time they cut corners is on taking care of coaches.
Okay. Let me impart something to you, young Padlam or whatever here. John, have you ever heard the saying that there is no free lunch?
Oh, yeah, I know.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
Think how about before next week, we'll have another lesson, but dating involvement, and also we'll talk about food, free food, or the lack thereof. But perhaps we'll discuss this next week. You think how that apply?
I don't care to ever pay. I'm just saying, like, if someone's going to take care of you, I'm going to go to that place.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So we've learned, guy or girl, on the first date, you want to ask, hey, if I coach for the next 30 years, are you going to be all right with this? And then we've learned that if someone's not going to let you eat for free, you need to pack the bus up and go somewhere else.
Exactly.
You walk in.
Or you take them to a nice pizza place and you say,
oh, nice. Yeah. Yes.
You just, hey, everyone bring a little bit of money.
Buy my free meal is what you're after.
I'm not saying
okay.
This is somebody who couldn't eat fast food for like a month and a half, so I think I was just excited to be able to do that.
Okay, I got you. Well, I wanted to work in here our plea for feedback, and Shane's been sharing some of that with us, and seems like we've been getting some good feedback, Shane. To contact Shane, you can do so through email at admin1@svcsportzone.com. On Twitter, you can use his handle there, SVC Sport Zone. And when we do tweet, we use the hashtag SVC Sports Talk. On Facebook, Shane has two profiles, Shane Combs SVC Sport Zone and svcsportzone.com. John has an email address of jbruce1018@yahoo.com. And, of course, his Twitter handle, @coconutwallpapa. I think maybe next week, since it is our 250th show, we might lean on him a little bit harder to explain that particular handle for Twitter. I don't know whether we'll get that.
There's a chance.
Yeah, there is that chance. There's always hope springs eternal. And when John does something other than talk about how asinine something is, he uses the hashtag SVC Sports Talk. Derek, who still enjoys some time with us, he can be reached at the verified account of DW1509, and his email account is DerekW1509@gmail.com. So there we have our contact information. We'd love to hear from you, good, bad, and different. It's all good. There you go, Shane.
Well, guys, really good show. I know we're coming up on the end of our spring season here within a couple of weeks, and I'm trying not to leave anything out. I appreciate a lot of the basketball questions. Congratulations to Andrew Day, a former player of mine there at Paint Valley, to Kyle Miller. I know we have some other coaching changes possible at a couple other schools. I don't know how official that is or how public that is yet, so I'm going to hold off. I'm getting various questions. During these shows right now, we're trying to give the love to our spring athletes and programs, but we'll certainly see if anything comes about that we want to try to work in. We can do that. So, again, I wanted to at least mention that and say congrats to those people so you didn't think we were ignoring those off-season emails. But, guys, look forward to next week. Hopefully have some different things planned. Maybe you have some special guests on to talk a little bit about the incredible history. Obviously, we can't talk history on this show without thanking Triple Crown for all their incredible support. So, guys, on that note, we'll get out of here. So until the next time, which will be show 250 for Triple Crown Family Fun Center and all the other great sponsors on our website, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes in at DBK Media Services, and for John Bruce, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.